Hey everyone, I'm Dr. Terry, and this is the Love Doctor program on Empower Radio, the show that gives you the facts about relationships and love. Now, I've been helping individuals and couples improve their relationships for the past 30 years, and today I'm here to give you science-based strategies for your relationships and those of your children. Welcome, welcome, everyone. It's Dr. Terry. Thank you so much for joining me today. I appreciate you. I have a wonderful, great program for you today. It's all about dating for single parents. Now, if you're parenting solo, you may have seen that most dating books sound as if the world is child-free and as though opinion is all that's available. Well, my guest today, Dr. Duana Welch, is one of my favorites, and you've heard her on the program before, and I know you love her. She has a great new book that's coming out in January, full of dating advice for single parents and full of good science. The book is called Love Factually for Single Parents and Those Dating Them. It is the first guide that relies on science to help this large and growing group of men and women find the right partner, not only for themselves, but for their families too. Now, Dr. Duana and I have a lot in common. We both use and apply social science to solve real life relationship issues. And you know, listeners, I've said this so many times before, I love that. Now, for more information about the book and free content, go to lovefactually.co. And to learn more about Dr. Duana Welch, go to lovesciencemedia.com. So welcome to the program, Duana. So nice to have you with us again today.
Oh, Terry, it's my honor to be on this program with such an outstanding scientist and furtherer of the cause of love. So thank you for inviting me.
Oh, my pleasure as well. And as I said, I always love talking with you. Now, before we get to talking about your new book and relationship advice for single parents, remind listeners about your passion for using social science to solve real life relationship issues and your journey as a social scientist.
Yeah, so I have a bachelor's and a master's and a doctorate in psychology, but not in clinical or counseling psychology. So it's kind of funny that I have wound up doing anything quite this applied. My history is that I got degrees in psychology about memory and aging. Isn't that funny that I would wind up doing this?
I love it. I love it though.
And so I had a lot of experience in doing things like creating memory training programs and inviting people to come to my laboratory for every week for 2 months to see whether the programs worked or not and to help people feel better about their abilities and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I had two moments where there were turning points for me. One was when I was 27 and I had a particularly bad breakup, and I went to the library and the bookstore looking for a book that used science to help me find a good partner and help me avoid pain, and it didn't exist. And so I started reading other people's science because even though I wasn't in that field, for selfish reasons, I wanted to know what was going on. And so I wrote this lengthy journal where I made deals with myself. Okay, I'm going to try this and not this. I very much had the view that your life is your experiment and that using what works for most people most of the time, which is really what social science is, it shows what most people do most of the time, what works for most people most of the time, it shows you where your odds are. I thought, well, I'll put the odds on my side and see what happens. And I wound up very happily married. Unfortunately, I did not realize that I was very happily married to someone with serious substance abuse issues that he could not get past. And it turned out that our baby had type 1 diabetes. And was really in danger from a parent who was under the influence and trying to give insulin. That wasn't a combination that was going to work. So even though I was still very much in love with my husband, I left him. Mm-hmm. And I was thoroughly heartbroken. And so I, again, had a very sad opportunity to apply the science, but this time as a single parent. I looked for books for single parents. They did not exist. There was almost, you know, it's funny when you look at, and I know you know this because you write science-based advice books also, and they're wonderful. I've read them. But yeah, they're fantastic. Everybody read Dr. Terry's books.
Thank you, Joyna. That was a good promo in the middle of your journey and story.
Well, so I, as you know, there's not much that's based on science, but when it comes to single parenting, there's not much at all, not even anything based on opinions when it comes to dating. So I began learning the things that I present in both my books. Of course, the books have some different content because one is for everyone. That's Love Factually, 10 Proven Steps for My Wish to I Do. And then this new one that comes out in January in audio and paper book and ebook is Love Factually for Single Parents and Those Dating Them. And it really drills down into the special challenges that single parents and those dating them face and how to put the odds on your side. Because frankly, I found when I started learning about it that I could get pretty depressed pretty quickly. And I'm not a naturally depressive person or I'm an optimist. I like to see the glass as half full, and in fact, a glass that I could fill all the way if I knew the right tips and tricks. So I decided to find that for myself. And then when Vic and I met, and we've been married in January, it'll be 11 years, and we're very happily married.
Wow, that is great. And you know, I love your journey. First of all, I should tell listeners that I love both of your books because both of us use science to help others. Because, I mean, keeping science all to yourself, like you said, that great advice that is true for most people in most situations, we should be sharing it with the public. And you've done that. I've done that. But I love also your story, Duana, because what it says is that even as a scientist, and myself included, can turn to these books, these self-help books that include science to help our own lives. And not much is out there that is science-based. As you said, most of the information about dating or what you do, you know, to have a great marriage or what to do when you break up or get a divorce is based on personal opinion and not good science even. So I love that you have just this wonderful story where science helped you as well as that you're using science in both of your books. So I'm a huge advocate. And listeners, I have read the new book and it is good. I gave you a very positive endorsement because I loved the book as well, Duana. So after all of that, the story and talking about your books, I love what you're doing.
Well, thank you. You know, Freud would have called it wish fulfillment, trying to reach back into the past and change it. I always feel when I'm writing as if I'm writing to that earlier version of myself, the person I was when I was frankly deeply unhappy and needed encouragement and needed to know what a roadmap was that might possibly get me where I was going. Because let me tell you, if other people's opinions had gotten me where I was going, I would never have turned to science. Mm-hmm. If current cultural mores and ways would have gotten me there, I wouldn't have turned to science. The whole reason I turned to science is that a whole lot of what I thought, what my family thought, what my friends thought, what my culture thought was just plain wrong. And here's an example.
Yes, give us an example. Yeah. How is culture wrong?
Well, for one thing, people kept telling me, oh, Duana, love will find you when you're least expected. You know, we have a word for people who really believe that, and that word is single. That's not really how it works out. Most of us, after college, and most people don't find their mate in college anymore. It used to be the case that they found them in high school or college. That's no longer the case. So after that, people actually have to put themselves out there and look. And if you look in a strategic way, which I now know what that looks like for women and men alike. If you look in a strategic way, your odds increase a lot that you will find not just a partner, but a partner where it can really work and you can be happy.
It just doesn't happen, right? It's not just going to happen. And if it was meant to be, it was meant to be. You have to put yourself out there is what you're saying. So tell us, I mean, because you sort of hinted at it, what is a strategic way that single parents can put themselves out there?
So one thing is to get really creative about where you are dating and how you're dating and how you can use the network you already have. Because folks, you're single parents, you're busy. You don't have the time that you used to have to put into this. So, for example, I still hear from single parents who tell me that they don't want to go online. And I get that if you don't want to go online. And in a moment, we can address what you can do instead. But I want to start first by plugging online. Mm-hmm. And here's why. There was a major study that was done from like 2000, I forget the exact years, but I think it was like 2001 to 2009, something like that. And over that course of time, the Harris survey found that couples that met online were happier than couples that met other ways. It was not a big impact, and you wouldn't expect it to be. I mean, people, you wouldn't think that how happily married you are, that there would be huge impact from how you met. But that there's any impact at all is interesting.
Yes, and, very interesting.
Yeah, and research shows that people are actually slightly more self-revealing and slightly more honest online than they are sometimes in other ways. So that meant that people who had met at church weren't quite as happy as people who had met online, which I found fascinating. Another thing was that a full third of the people who got married in that time frame all across America married someone they had met online. Mm-hmm. So this is no longer an unusual way. And if you're same-sex oriented, and I'm an equal opportunity love scientist, I want everyone to find love. So if you're same-sex oriented and you're a single parent, well, it turns out that same-sex couples are even more likely to find love online. I think it's now two-thirds of those couples meet online. So, you know, a nice thing for you if you're a single parent about dating online is you can do this bleary-eyed, unwashed, in your PJs, between taking care of your kids in the middle of the night, whenever you have time.
Right. And I'm a huge advocate as well, Duana, of online dating, because when you don't have time, whether you're a single parent, as we're discussing today, or you're working 24/7 or whatever, you are busy, even if you're a grandparent and you just don't have the time because you're taking care of your grandkids or volunteering in the community, whatever it may be, it is a convenient way. Who has time to do traditional dating anymore, where you go out, you see somebody, you date them, you find out, you go home, you wait a few days and either call or get a call or a text or whatever. And then if it doesn't work, you go out with someone else. You are able to see several people at once if you do online dating. So I am there right with you. And those stats about happier and whether you are opposite sex or same sex attracted, that is wonderful, good science to know.
Yeah, it's just, it's so funny because, Terry, during those years, that's when I met Vic. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even know that study was happening.
Now, how did you meet Vic? Did you meet him online?
I met him online, yes.
Oh, so you did.
I did. Oh, and, well, great. I was a busy single parent, right?
Yes, yes, absolutely.
So what I did is I did a combination of pre-screening online. So anyone who reached out to me in a meaningful way, I would pre-screen them to see if they met my must-haves to the extent that I could assess that from their profile and from writing back and forth. And then when we met in person, I had a specific restaurant where I met people for coffee or tea for the first meeting. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I love it. Do you know my clients say, Duana, that they go to the same place as well, and the server or the person behind the coffee counter always like wink, like if it's a new person, like, ooh, new person, yes. The other person didn't work out, right? Was yes. That the same with you?
Well, no, it was even worse because I scheduled them like job interviews. I would have them every hour to hour and a half, same place all day.
That's great. Because I have to just laugh for a second. Okay, I like it.
Yeah, well, okay, I had a diabetic toddler, you know, I mean, I was busy. At that point, I was running a public relations firm for Austin from my house in San Antonio, and I was single parenting a type 1 diabetic child, and I had some help from my mom and stepdad with that, but you know, I didn't want to take time away from my kid. That's another thing. It wasn't just that I had to be with my child. I wanted to be with my child. Right. So I wasn't willing to expend a lot of energy on people that didn't have a lot of the boxes ticked out of the gate. And so online, I would meet people who wanted to have an initial meeting. And if it was suitable for us to have that meeting, i.e. if it looked like they could be a fit, then we would arrange to meet and I would suggest this one place. And the wait staff were very discreet, which is the one reason I chose it. One guy figured it out. He figured out that he wasn't the only guy that I saw that day. And all the time, there was just one guy who told me that he figured it out. And he called me that night. This is back when people were still calling, right? Because it's before the iPhone. And everybody had T9 and they hated to text because it took forever. but he called me that night and he said, you know, I'm really upset. And I said, oh, well, why is that? And I thought, what could I have done? And, you know, 1 hour of pleasant conversation that would upset this man so much. And he said, well, you know, I figured out that you saw at least one other person that day.
Wow. And did Vic figure it out as well? And how did you know that Vic was the one to continue to date after that hour that you gave him at the same place as you gave everybody else?
Vic and I had a really different story than this, actually. That guy, I just said, you know, I get it. I'm a single parent. You're not. You've got a lot of time. I don't. I have to treat this almost like a job interview process for the most important job in my life. And you know, he totally got it and asked me out again. But it didn't work out, which is fine. But Vic and I, we were introduced on eHarmony. And I met on eHarmony, but I don't endorse anyone dating site more than the other, as long as you pay for a membership and as long as there's a lot more information available than just photos and 150 words. Mm-hmm. A lot of the apps give you photos and 150 words, and we now know from some really new science that under those circumstances, people tend to aim for someone who's 25% better looking than they are. And you and I, Dr. Terry, we both know that that doesn't work. We need to be with a match physically and in a lot of other ways. And so what's happening
in a lot of other ways, right? Underlying values and attitudes, especially as well.
Yeah. So I'm really happy that Vic and I met in an era when the dating app really wasn't an option, because on eHarmony, you know a lot about the person. And so we were on eHarmony, both of us. I don't know for how long. He was on there for a year, and his process looked like this. He was unhappily married for the last 10 years of his marriage. He wanted to be happily married. He was not there to date casually. Mm-hmm. He would look at women's profiles. He looked at more than 1,000 profiles in depth over the period of a year. He invited 3 women on a first date. The only woman who ever got a second date was me.
Wow. That is fascinating.
He was very, very focused on getting exactly what he wanted, and he was very clear about that. In the meantime, I was also looking for him. So when we were introduced on eHarmony, one thing that I knew for sure is that most men are a lot more romantic about love than most women are. And not only that, but they kind of love to hate and hate to love a competitive aspect. If they feel like a woman's got options, they actually like her even more. They think she's better looking. They think she's more desirable. So I just stopped reaching out to men first. Mm-hmm. There's other research that shows that men are 6 to 8 times more likely to reach out than women are. So men know how to reach out. I wasn't going to reach out to him. Mm-hmm. Well, in the meantime, he had decided that I was his dream girl from the profile. And he was looking at my profile every day. He had told all of his best friends about me. Again, he hadn't reached out to me yet. He had told everyone about me, but he wouldn't reach out. And the reason, of course, I couldn't have known this, was that he was sure he was going to screw it up. Mm-hmm. He never saw that long. Here was finally a woman he really wanted to reach out to. He was super excited, but he just felt like he was going to flub it up. And so I gave it 30 days. And after 30 days, I thought, you know what? I looked at his profile every day for 30 days, Dr. Terry.
Wow, 30 days. And so you reached out to him.
I didn't.
Still didn't in those 30 days.
I'm so stubborn. No, what I did is I blocked him. I decided, you know what? He's just not that into you, girl. He's seen your profile. He's either dating somebody else or he's just not into you. Move on. Stop looking at this guy's profile every day. Well, a day later, I thought, oh, you know what? It didn't hurt to keep that match open. I liked him so much better than anybody else. Mm-hmm. He contacted me right away, and he has since admitted that had I not blocked him and then brought him back, he probably never would have reached out. He would have kept telling himself the story that he would do it someday. But he said When he came home,
that's so fascinating, Duana. So what do you recommend in your book? Should women reach out, or do you recommend or give the advice that men should reach out first?
I give the advice for men to reach out first. And the reason for that is, first of all, that we know that 6 to 8 times more often men do reach out first. Right. Second of all, it takes a lot of investment and confidence in a man for a relationship to really work. Once Vic reached out, he showed me the very best of what he was capable of. And he never took me for granted, ever. And still doesn't. This morning, the first thing he said to me was that he adored me.
Oh, that's nice. I love that affirmation. And you know that affirmation is so important to the happiness in a relationship. Now, I have to stop us because we sort of got off to like where single parents can go to meet others. But in your book in chapter 3, before that, you talk about how it's important for single parents to face their fears and fix their picker, P-I-C-K-E-R. So tell us briefly, because we're running out of time as well. You know I love to talk to you. What does that mean? And what are you telling single parents when you say fix your picker?
Well, I'm saying that right now, especially, data show that a lot of people focus way too much on appearance and not enough on character. And character really, it counts a lot. I've yet to meet the person who divorced over appearance, but I have certainly met people who have divorced over aspects of character that were there from the beginning or mismatches that were there from the beginning. So I will tell you for sure, you need to focus on, and the unfortunate acronym here is KILL, kindness, intelligence, lovingness, loyalty.
Oh, I love it. KILL. Say that
KILL
again.
With kindness. Kindness, intelligence, lovingness, loyalty. Now, the intelligence part is actually the least important part here because most of us naturally gravitate towards someone who's about as smart as we are, which doesn't mean we have all the same degrees. I have 3 more certifications and degrees than my husband has. I am not superior to him in any way.
I love that. KILL. That's really a good acronym. Now, we only have a few minutes left, and I have to ask you the question, Duana, that most people ask is, so once, if you are a single parent and you meet somebody that you really like, what's your advice on when to introduce that person to your children or to your family, especially over the holidays that are coming up? What do you give as advice?
Boy, this is the big question, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, this is it.
And I did a
3 minutes.
Yeah, I'll answer it. I did a survey before my book that showed that people were so divided on this, and this was the top question they had. So drum roll here is the quick and dirty answer. Folks, if it's not serious enough that the relationship is exclusive between the two of you, where you have mutually acknowledged that you're not seeing anyone else and that this is trending permanent, then it's not serious enough to get your kids involved.
Okay, so that's great. That's really specific. So if you're not exclusive, you don't think of yourself as a couple, then it's not serious enough to invite them to the holiday gatherings or introduce your children, right?
Yes, I will make one exception here.
Yes.
The one exception is the sneaky way, which is where your kids have no idea they're meeting a person of interest to you. So let's say you play on a basketball team and anybody can come and watch. And so it turns out that your girlfriend is one of the people who comes and watches that day.
Mm-hmm.
So she can get a peek at your kids, maybe interact with them a little bit, but your kids have no idea that this is more than just a friend.
Mm-hmm. Why is it too much stress for children to meet new partners if it's not the secret way, but it's the real way where you're actually introducing? Is that too much stress for children?
It is stressful for kids because kids get invested, especially if they like your partner. They get very invested in this relationship working out. And ironically, it can have the effect of keeping the parents in the relationship when the relationship shouldn't be maintained.
Mm-hmm. I get it. Right. And you know, kids get invested, they get attached, they start having feelings. So listeners, make sure you listen to Duana's advice. So thank you so much, Duana, for, you know, joining us today. I always love talking to you. I have a million other questions. Will you come back and talk more about the book?
I would love to come back on. It is always my honor to be here.
Oh, thank you. Well, we will definitely get you back in 2019, listeners, to talk more about Dr. Duane Welch's new book called Love Factually for Single Parents and Those Dating Them. But go buy, purchase her book now. You can visit her website at lovefactually.co, or you can go to her website at lovesciencemedia.com. And by the way, Duane Welch, D-U-A-N-A is how you spell her first name, W-E-L-C-H. And as always, listeners, thank you for listening. I appreciate you. I'm Dr. Terry, and this is the Love Doctor program on Empower Radio. I'm here always to help your relationships be the best they can be. My personal website is Dr. Terry, thelovedoctor.com. And while you're on my website, be sure to sign up for my free monthly newsletter. So listeners, until next time, here's to your healthy, happy relationships.